Hey, Sens fans, this is Stuntman Stu, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
I'm a sleepwalking cheetah with a hat full of napalm. I'm a runaway son.
If you've just hit play, you're listening to the most irreverent Senators podcast on the internet. I'm joined in studios today by Graham, my co-host as always. How are you doing, Graham?
Not too bad, thanks. How are you doing?
Not too bad myself. And Francois. Francois, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. It looks like you slept in the studio.
Actually, I did.
That just gave me
you
for
stayed
curve.
Here all week.
I did stay here all week, actually.
Just to jump back in the box. That's dedication.
Yeah, I noticed a small nest in the fire stairs there, so good to see you've gotten comfortable.
Well, you know what they say, Rome wasn't built in a day, eh?
That's actually what the Ottawa Sun ran with after the Sens won the first game against Montreal.
I remember that.
Yeah. So speaking of Sens winning and Montreal, did you guys watch the game last night?
Yeah. Anyone a Habs fan yet?
Definitely not.
Not really, but I do feel kind of guilty. I was kind of pulling for Montreal there last night.
Yeah, I think we can all be a little guilty of that, except for you, Graham. What's this nonsense about you cheering for the Capitals?
I kind of wanted Jacques Martin to go 0-4 in Game 7s.
I guess that's a good reason.
Am I the only one here who enjoys to continuously see Alex Ovechkin kind of fail in big games?
Hating Ovechkin's kind of like become the new phenomenon, though, right?
Yeah, it's
back
like,
when it was like him versus Crosby, everyone kind of hated Crosby because he was the whiny diver. Now people legitimately hate Ovechkin now. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's like when the Rolling Stones released their first bad song, you know, maybe something off of Voodoo Lounge or something. And, you know, it's just a real curveball to everyone.
Bridges to Babylon.
Harlem Shuffle.
Yeah, it's a weird dynamic though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But it is strange to see the roles completely reversed over the course of a few short months, right?
Am I the only one who watched last night's game and saw some similarities between Alex Semin's game and Alexei Ashin's from the Senators playoff days?
Keep going.
Yeah, it's completely invisible. Completely invisible. No dedication on the back end. You know, he's floating.
Are you saying here that you think that Russians float and shy away from physicality?
No.
No?
No. No. Not at all.
And, you know, again, Mike Green, utterly unimpressive to me last night. I mean, turning into kind of a sieve defensively, at least in his own end, taking bad penalties. I mean, I understand the guy's trying to, or what they say is he's trying to make stuff happen out there. But, you know, he's really not showing up in the playoffs, at least the way he does in the regular season, right?
No, I think that's a good point. And I also think it's interesting to look at as well.
That's why he's a Norris Trophy nominee.
Yeah. Go figure. Go figure. The Washington goaltending situation was supposed to be their tragic flaw. When it turned out, it was the big guys up front who just couldn't get it done at the end.
Well, that's right. You know, like I was saying to you guys when we were walking in the studio here, I looked at the numbers and Alex Ovechkin, after game 4, 0 goals. Or sorry. Yeah, game 5, 6, and 7. 0 goals, and in game 4, 1 goal, and it was the 4-0 goal, so it was basically a Heatley goal, right? And I was looking at it too, and in career game 7s, I think Alex Ovechkin has 4 career game 7s, 1 goal.
At his age, 4 career game 7s isn't too half bad, though, that said. But
he had a horrendous second half, though. You know, following the Olympic break, he didn't put up any points whatsoever, though.
No, that's true.
So I don't know. Like a lot of reporters and journalists are speculating that he maybe he's hurt. I know Bruce Boudreau came out and denied that he was, but I don't know. Maybe this is something to keep an eye on moving forward. Maybe he has one of those mysterious Jason Spezza doesn't have a back injury when later it comes out that Jason Spezza had a back injury kind of things.
Yeah, and again, as I've said many times before, I'm not a doctor, nor do I pretend to understand anything about that profession. But when you look at Ovechkin, the way he plays the game, number one, the amount of games he's played this year, and, I guess he had his injuries over the past 2 years, and the Olympics, it's a lot of toll for the body to take. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he was hurt. His mouth certainly wasn't hurt, that's for sure.
Wasn't there some quote in the papers? I forget who the player was, but they said at this time of year, who is 100%? Oh, no. That was Aaron Hill. Never mind.
What I was looking forward to most from the whole series was after Ovechkin was running his mouth about Halak and his hand shaking. I really wanted Halak to come forth after the game last night and say, you know, the only hands I was shaking were the Capitals as I skated off the ice victorious. But that was kind of, I don't know, maybe that's expectations for Patrick Waugh or something.
Well, and the other thing I was really surprised about is I never thought I'd see the day where it looks, at least to me, throughout the course of a series, that Jacques Martin actually outcoached somebody.
It's interesting when you get into Jacques Martin, though, in those big games, because like a lot of times with Ottawa, they had the horses. It wasn't a situation in which like he was a severe underdog like he was with Montreal versus the Capitals. It's good for him, I guess, to get the monkey off his back to win a game. Game 7, but I don't know, until he proves that he can win with a good team, I don't know. It's just
so anyways, basically going back to Ovechkin, I was on ESPN.com the other day. Nice little plug there for that website.
They need it.
Yeah, because you know their hockey coverage is just incredible. Anyways, so I was reading a lot of Ovechkin's and some of the Capitals' comments leading up to Game 7, and the one thing that struck me, and I'll just give you kind of a summary, is basically when Ovechkin was pressed with the question about, you know, do you take ownership of this Game 7 and how much of this do you put on your own shoulders in terms of rising to the occasion and whatnot, I thought he was pretty deflective in terms of passing the buck to a lot of his teammates. He said something along the lines of, well, it's not only up to me. A lot of other guys have to step up, given that it's Game 7, so on, et cetera. And I'm just, you know, curious to see what you guys think about that in terms of if this guy really wants to be the man, and he's being acknowledged by a lot of people as definitely, if not being the most dynamic player in the NHL, the most dominant or even the best player in the world. Are these the type of things that a captain and the best player in the world should be saying leading up to a Game 7, or should he be taking ownership of the big moment?
It's nice to see him playing defense for once.
Yeah, that just killed whatever I was going to say. I was just going to say, it's just strange to see a guy like Ovechkin, who loves the limelight and to be the center of attention so much, clearly step out of it. Like, was the guy scared of the ramifications that he was going to receive in the media or from the fans if they lost? And, you know, eventually they did, so maybe he played his cards wisely. I don't know what was going on in his mind. Like, he certainly wouldn't hear a remark like that from Alfredson or Mark Messier or Sidney Crosby or whoever you want to throw under the bus here.
Some of his teammates just didn't step up, though. Like, I can kind of understand where he's coming from. Semin had a horrendous series. Mike Green, as you mentioned, didn't play particularly well either. So yeah, like I can understand it, but you know, like part of being the highest paid player in the game is, you know, ownership and responsibility. You have to, you know, you have to say the things, absorb the criticisms that come with it, and I don't know. It's just part of being a captain for the Washington Capitals. You have to accept that. I don't know. And Jason Spezza has kind of absorbed that in Ottawa a lot lately. I know he's kind of been sensitive with some of the comments lately. I don't know how you guys feel about some of the reporters already describing him as a lightning rod of criticism. I know it's the time of year. I know his no trade clause kicks in on July 1st. He's always been pretty good with absorbing criticism, but I don't know. It seems lately that maybe he's taken it a little bit more to heart this year than he has in the past. How do you guys feel about that?
Well, like Francois mentioned earlier off the show, it is strange to hear how Brian Murray would say that this guy was troubled and looking for guidance, or at least to, you know, be calmed down or whatever, reassured that he was still the Jason Spezza of old or whatever he needed to hear. I don't know, though. It's weird to hear this guy come publicly or make it public that he was disappointed and he is taking this stuff to heart, because this is stuff, especially in the Canadian hockey media, that they're going to latch on to, and they're not going to be able to let go of it until Jason Spezza does something significant.
Discussion, right? Like TSN will eat that up right up until the moment he's dealt or not dealt, right?
Yeah, it's going to fill rumor message boards and whatever else for the next few months. So good for them, I guess.
They'll milk it.
Great. Yeah, and I think, you know, in the case of Jason Spezza, it's not a situation in which he doesn't care and his work ethic isn't there. I think that clearly we've been able to see, especially, you know, this playoff year a few times where Jason Spezza definitely his intensity level is there and he really does care about winning. And I think, you know, it's a lot of frustration both in terms of the regular season and the playoffs that, you know, I think Jason put a lot of pressure on his own shoulders in terms of trying to ascend to the throne as the go-to guy in Ottawa, and it didn't necessarily materialize for him. That combined with, you know, having to answer essentially the same questions game after game, year after year, And I think after a while, you start to, regardless of what the question is, think that people are attacking your work ethic and your character as a hockey player. And I can, you know, I kind of feel for Jason in that respect. So
I think that the expectations certainly need to be tempered a little bit in the city in order for everyone to reach a, you know, an amicable understanding of, you know, what Jason Spezza is and what he means to this hockey club.
All right. That's a good point. Do you guys want to take a break and then we'll come right back with some more discussion, playoff discussion?
Yeah, sure.
Wicked. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. So we were talking about Jason Spezza before the break, and one of the things that we talked about is he's been bearing a lot of the criticism in the city from the media, not so much from the fans that I've seen anyways or read from. And I don't know, we've talked about this a little bit off air about how maybe instead of trading a guy like Spezza, maybe better to insulate him with maybe a better second line center. I know that's an issue that Francois wanted to touch upon. You want to take it away?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, the one thing is, I just want to make it clear, in terms of the way he plays the game and things like that, I'm a huge Mike Fisher fan, but I've always questioned whether he's a legitimate second-line center. So I decided to do a little bit of digging, because one of the things we talked about is obviously insulating him, and we've sort of thrown out names out there of some of the playoff teams and who their second-line centers are and how they compare. So I looked it up among the playoff teams to see, you know, points wise in the regular season, how their second line centers perform. So I'll just list those off for you quickly. Obviously Malkin, number one, Ryan Kessler, Zetterberg, Patrick Sharp, Tim Connolly, Mike Richards, Brooks Like, Scott Gomez, Matt Duchene. And then number 10 is Mike Fisher. And then they're just shortly behind him, David Krejci and Joe Pavelski and Joe Pavelski only played 67 games. So,
pretty easy to see where that list gets kind of thin, eh?
Yeah, well, exactly, right? And, you know, obviously you can make all kinds of arguments about, well, Malkin's not a true number two center. He's more of a number one. But the reality is he is a number two center on the team he plays on. And so, I mean, you know, and same for Zetterberg, right? And a lot of these guys are outproducing Mike Fisher by a tidy margin, you know? So
what do you think, Tim? Is Mike Fisher a legit second-line center? Is that a direction the team needs to keep going in? Because he's been... I don't know. It seems like Ottawa's always kind of had him penciled in as the number two guy. I know he hasn't necessarily played with the most offensive players, but he hasn't exactly thrived with the right offensive players either. I know a lot of people will give him credit for his hot start and point to Alexei Kovalev as the reason, but it's not like Kovalev was putting up points while Fisher was. And conversely, when Kovalev was putting up points, Mike Fisher wasn't really putting up many in the second half either. So I don't know. Where do you come out on this?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the Ottawa Senators for a long time have been trying to shove this round peg into a square hole, right? It's just not going to happen. We've seen that now. It's not like, you know, Mike Fisher's on the verge of breaking out and scoring, you know, 40 goals.
Well, I mean, he's 29 years old now, right? You'd think that if he was going to break out, it would have happened by now.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's, you know, maybe he hasn't peaked. Maybe he could still, you know, end up scoring a few more goals in a season, which is fine if he was maybe playing with some better players or whatnot. But I really don't think that Mike Fisher is the answer. His style of play is just so much better suited to the third line. Unfortunately, with his contract and the ice time that goes with it, the guy is everything but a second line center, except for his skill suit, right?
And the one thing is, like, I looked at his stats over the years, and, you know, he put up 53 points this year. And in previous years, where we can agree that he hasn't necessarily gotten as much ice time or played on, you know, maybe the third line and things like that, you know, he's put up comparable points. So there's no reason to think that if we were to bring in a second line center and potentially keep Mike Fisher, that his production would drop off necessarily if he were to move back to the third line, right?
Yeah, especially if Corey Clouston's behind the bench, because you know he's going to roll those at least three lines nonstop, right? The fourth line, you know, Depends if Donovan's out there or not, I guess, and if they need to squeeze in an extra 4 minutes. But the three lines, Mike Fisher should be able to get a very regular shift, including power play time. You know, he should still be able to put up his points. But again, the money. How much money are you going to distribute down the center? Right there alone, you've got, what, $11.5 million between two guys, and you still need a second-line center? It's going to come at a premium, and that's also going to come at your at the expense of some of your other players.
Maybe Ottawa should learn from a model like Pittsburgh, where they have a guy like Staal pulling four. I think he's close to $4 million. So, like, similar money to Fisher, and then you have Malkin and Crosby down the middle. I know any second line center you bring in is not going to be as good as Malkin, but maybe it's a model to follow. Maybe you pay a guy like $5 million or $5.5 million to be your second line guy. I don't really know who's available. I know on Twitter I was jokingly talking about Plekanec as a possible option. I know I asked James Myrtle, like, you know, what do you think of his market value, and And true enough, like, Montreal advanced to the second round, and his market value is going to be pretty high because it's a pretty thin free agent year. But I don't know. I don't know if you'd be willing to spend that kind of money to strengthen the middle, especially because you have a guy like Chris Kelly there. I don't know. Maybe you flip a guy like Kelly and go from there. But I don't know. It's a weird team right now because they have a lot of defensive prospects on the cusp who are going to step in. So I don't think you spend $5 million on a crappy defenseman just for a stopgap measure. I don't know. How do you guys feel about it?
Well, I mean, free agency spending aside, would there be an opportunity there to... I know Peter Regan and Jason Spezza seem to have a lot of chemistry in the playoffs, but with Mihalik and Kovalev coming back, is there an opportunity there that if Chris Kelly is the odd man out, and I think he may end up being the odd man out, you can move Peter Regan to center, you know, drop him back down to center the second line, along with, say, Kovalev and somebody else, and then have Fisher center the third line. And he's always had very good chemistry with Chris Neal. So, you know, might that be an alternative?
Yeah, but are we prepared to rock the boat by dropping Regan back down to a role where he was not quite as successful as when he was playing wing? Like, I'm just not sure if Peter Regan is the guy to, to break that, you know, top eight of elite, second line centers in the NHL. I feel he's going to be a very effective forward long term, definitely top six guy. But whether or not you want him there or on the wing, especially considering how inexpensive he is currently and probably will be for what, the next 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, it's also going to be hard for Ottawa to start going strong down the center. Like, you know, it's like starting the bath and then deciding you want to have a shower. Well, you know, you're going to have to change something big at that point. So there's going to be a lot of maneuvering that would be to go around. I'm not saying that I disagree with it, because obviously I think we can all sit here and look at the teams and the names involved and say it's a successful model. And it probably will be if we look back even further in history. But is it going to happen right now? Probably not. Is it nice? Yeah. But, I mean, what are you going to do about it?
Because I think the one thing you see in terms of the teams that have moved on in these playoffs, so the four teams left in the East and the four teams left in the West, is most of the time, obviously, it doesn't have to be said anymore, very deep down the middle. But not only very deep down the middle, they're getting offense, of at least 40 to 50 points out of the third line center, right? So even in the case of Vancouver, like a Kyle Wellwood, or you look at a team like, for example, Pittsburgh with Jordan Staal, they're generating offense from that third line as well. So, you know, maybe it's something to look at in terms of trying to, I mean, bringing in somebody to play that second line center role if we're looking to roll forward with the more or less the current makeup of this team and have playoff success, right?
Well, it's a weird offseason, though, because regardless of what you do, you're going to completely change the dynamics of your forward groups. Because, yeah, like, Peter Regan had success with Jason Spezza. You have a third line of Kelly and Ruutu and Neal that were pretty damn effective. But the organization has to decide, what the hell are they going to do with Nick Foligno? And if that guy's not good enough to play top six, he's got to be on your third line. And then that's where you have Ruutu, right? But that's like $1.3 million that, you know, you could allocate to your defense or to a second line center. It's going to be really interesting to see how Brian Murray reshuffles this team.
Yeah, there are very few roster spots up for grabs on the forward line, at least. I mean, you can look at maybe... You can't even say that Chris Kelly's job is up for grabs, because it's not, right? He's a vet on a contract. He's not going to be going anywhere. Who are you looking at here? Like, Donovan's spot, Zach Smith's spot? I mean, it's all kind of one rotating, you know, slot, right? Jesse Winchester.
I know that guys like Kelly and Ruutu and Neal had career years. So maybe it is time to flip a guy like that rather than wait for their value to decrease. You know, like,
that's just not something I'm used to hearing as an Ottawa Senators fan. I can't really
No, but that's good business. That's good business management, though.
Oh, like, I mean, we can agree.
Like, if
you have Santonio Holmes, the Super Bowl MVP, can be traded out of Pittsburgh, certainly, you know, I think it'd be a smart business move to trade a depth player who had a career year and who may now finally have generated market interest for him, right?
Kevin Millar.
Cowboy up.
Who's got a better body, Kevin Millar or Kyle Wellwood?
But the other thing is, I was speaking to a friend the other day, and we were talking about the Volchenkov thing, and I don't think, I don't even think it comes down to a choice. I don't think Volchenkov, flat out, I don't think he'll be back. But he was saying, you know, if you give me the option between keeping Andy Sutton and Matt Cullen or keeping Anton Volchenkov, I keep Sutton and Cullen. But, you know, why are people looking at this as an either-or, as a zero-sum game where you have to retain these guys or you have to spend right to the cap to be competitive? Like, you know, would you not be comfortable with letting all three of these guys walk and free up some salary and see what you have going forward with the current roster?
Oh, I completely agree, especially when it comes down to the trade deadline time, right? I mean, that's a chance for Ottawa to make a big splash if Ottawa is a competitive team and, you know, push them further into the playoffs. Maybe that's an opportunity right there. I mean, Francois, you and I were drooling over the free agent list that's going to be coming next year, if it even happens.
Yeah, we're starting, 2011, we're starting the David Backus, David Perron countdown.
Yeah, it's coming to Ottawa.
I think the reason why people look at a guy like Andy Sutton or Matt Cullen and say they're irreplaceable, or not irreplaceable, but you'd want to re-sign a guy like that, is because we gave up second-round picks. And if you let them go, it's... I don't want to draw correlations between John Mockler and Brian Murray, because I think Brian Murray is exponentially better than Mockler's era was, but he's given up a first and two second rounders in the past 2 years. And if, you know, Cam Pooley could be gone after this. Like, all three of those, the guys that he dealt for, could be gone, and you're just kind of like, well, wasted assets, right?
Yeah, but what's worse, wasted assets or wasted money that's going to hurt you three times down the road? We get a draft every year, right? Some of these guys' contracts are going to hurt you for many years.
I like Cullen, but we have a lot of similar players who put up like 45 to 55 points. Fisher, Mahalik, Kovalev, you know, and even guys like Kelly are kind of like on the bottom tier of, like, you know.
You call them support cast, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, we have so many of them, but we don't have a good second line center. I don't know. That's an issue for me moving forward. I'd like to see Ottawa get a second line center to support Jason Spezza, because I think it's completely unfair that he's bearing the brunt of the criticism right now.
Well, the thing is, because I think it's possible to win with Jason Spezza in this lineup. I think that... he's a legitimate first line center in the NHL, and if he was healthy all year, he probably would have put up some very comparable points to, say, the top 20 guys in scoring in the league, which is great. I mean, if that's the expectation, I think, of a first line center, and we've shown that we can go on deep runs with Jason Spezza in the lineup, whether he's being the first line center or a second line center on some of the previous iterations of this team, and I do think he's extremely competitive. But I do think the issue is that he's just, unfortunately, he's not the guy on a team that's carrying maybe some dead weight who can compensate for that and take over a game or a series and dictate the pace of play. I just don't think that's him. So you have to build a stronger team around him, I think.
I think it's like what Brian Murray said in his post playoff wrap up, where he said, you know, like, Ottawa's in a series against the Penguins. And everybody wants to draw parallels between Crosby and Spezza. You know, they're almost paid the same amount of money, but at completely different levels of player. You know, like, Jason's like a tier 2 superstar. He's kind of like a Mark Savard or a, I don't want to say Backstrom. I think Backstrom's better than he is.
Joe Thornton.
But yeah, like a Thornton. Like, you know, like, they're going to get their points. But you have to surround them with good talent. And I don't know. It's just, it's tough to fault the kid for what he is, you know?
It's also kind of tough having a guy like that on the team that you're, you know, perpetually trying to encourage and coddle and not be too mean on or boo him too much in case he takes it personally, right? I mean, having a guy like that who maybe is a lightning rod for this stuff, because maybe it's brought on a little bit himself, who knows?
Well, I think he's generally been pretty good, though, up until, I don't know. I didn't listen to Brian Murray's recent comments in the news, so I can't comment on them, but
Francois can shed some light on those for us.
Well, basically what he was saying was, you know, someone obviously brought up the question about the impending no trade clause and you know, exploring trade avenues, and, you know, that the standard stuff that the reporters like to bring up when it comes to Jason Spezza. And you know, Brian was fairly candid in saying that he had spoken with Jason, and that Jason is fairly upset not only with the playoff exit but with a lot of the criticism that he's been facing after this playoff exit, and he has been emotional, and Brian said that he was going to have to talk with him within the next couple of days. So if you read in between the lines there, You know, maybe Jason is maybe looking for a change on his behalf, right? And looking for a fresh start somewhere else.
I'll take the other side here. Maybe this is part of the maturing process for Jason Spezza. Maybe this is another little piece of adversity that he has to overcome.
I thought the public wedding was the stage of maturity.
Oh, no, no.
Nothing involving Danny Heatley was a stage of maturity.
That was just the legal maturity level right there. yeah, too bad we keep politics out of the show. Otherwise, we could go on about that. Anyways.
So what we were talking about the coming of age, everything like that.
Yeah, maturity levels.
But the one thing, you know, and a lot of people like to draw comparisons between, you know, the maturing process, you know, along those lines, the maturing process of Jason Spezza, and they like to draw parallels between him and Steve Yzerman. But I think the reality is you have to stop comparing Jason Spezza to Steve Yzerman to other people, right? He is Jason Spezza. So, you know, along the lines of Steve Yzerman, in the mix, potentially rumored for the Tampa Bay GM job. So, you know, what do you guys think about that?
Oh, way to go off topic. That's good. I like it. I don't know.
You don't know?
It's Tampa Bay. I care about Ottawa.
It was interesting listening to, I think it was Elliot Friedman last night, who was talking about it. And one of the things he said was, like, Yzerman has an opportunity to handpick the job in order for Steve to leave Detroit, where I think Ken Holland might have just been re-upped. I'm not too sure of that, but I think he might have signed an extension. Yzerman has it pretty sweet right now. I think he's the VP in Detroit. So for him to leave a pretty good gig, like, it's going to have to take a substantial kind of offer. I don't know if Stamkos and Hedman and their upbringing is a big enough chip for him to go there. I know he's been rumored to Ottawa in the past.
I think Eugene would just jump all over that one for headlines if he ever could bring Stevie here.
Here's my biggest problem with all this stuff, and this certainly isn't a new viewpoint, but what the fuck has Steve Yzerman done in a suit to warrant any of these credentials or any of this kind of publicity, you know, that he can handpick a job? Well, that's great that he can do that. He handpicked Team Canada and brought them gold.
But, I mean, that's like building a fantasy team, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's... You know, he could have screwed up, and yeah, he would have been crucified for it, but he didn't. And so now he gets his hand pick of a team. Like, is he just going to be another in the long line of, you know, hype GM bus? Like, obviously, we haven't seen Brian Burke long enough yet in Toronto, but the amount of fanfare that surrounds these decisions. And meanwhile, you've got these, you know, other GMs kicking around the league doing excellent jobs with what they have. And then Steve Yzerman just can walk into this stuff.
Well, I don't get it. The other thing with Yzerman is, you know, someone who's a bona fide Hall of Famer, perhaps one of the, you know, top 20 greatest players or so of all time. I mean, in terms of evaluating talent, like, do you actually think he'd be able to evaluate talent in an effective way, right? Because either he'd hold people to his own standard of excellence, or he just, he would kind of be like, have the blinders on, right? So as a general manager who needs to remain pretty well objective to evaluate talent, I mean, I just don't know that Steve would be able to do that in that capacity, right?
Yeah, totally agree. I think that, I'm just going to throw it out here, a prediction. I think Steve Yzerman will manage a hockey team just as well as Wayne Gretzky did coaching a hockey team.
I don't know. It all comes back to, you have to surround yourself with the right people. Obviously, you're so dependent upon your scouts. And your coaches, your advanced scouts, your capologists. You need guys who can crunch numbers and let you know, personal bias aside, like, every GM has a bias, right? Like, let's not kid ourselves here. Like, nobody's perfectly objective in the hockey industry. But can he succeed? I don't know. Probably. But again, it goes back to your point, right? He has no prior experience. He's never run a team before. So it's tough to sit here and say that he could have instant success. And I share your opinion. I don't understand why he's such a hot commodity. I think he's just a name.
Yeah, and take away all the toys he has at his disposal in Detroit, right? I mean, playing in a destination city.
Well, it goes back to the whole thing where, like, everything that Detroit touched for years was gold, right? It's like Dave Lewis going to Boston and coaching there. Like, that was a fucking disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know? And the other thing is, I guess the one thing that you can say, well, maybe this might carry some weight elsewhere, is he's learned under arguably the greatest general manager of our generation, which is Ken Holland, right? So depending on how actively he's been tagging along with Holland, he may have learned a thing or two, but I just don't see why a guy like this, who's revered in that city, his family is obviously settled there. He's in a great job where, from a team performance standpoint, not much is expected from him, right? He's pretty much just a figurehead for the Detroit Red Wings. Why would he ever want to leave that? I mean, unless he's still insanely competitive and needs to have his hands on a hockey team, which he probably is. Why would you ever want to leave what you have in Detroit currently, right?
No, it has to be.
Yeah, it's a great situation to be in, obviously. And yeah, ego. I don't think anyone else can explain it otherwise. Maybe he just wants to prove that he can walk into, you know, completely new, unknown situation to him, whether it be a team with nice pieces on the table like Tampa Bay. Am I not registering well?
No, you're fine.
Are you looking at me like I had fucking three eyes?
It's tough to see you with the fucking glare on that thing, though.
Unbelievable.
I see like half your face. The rest has disappeared.
Yeah, so perhaps it's ego. Maybe the guy just wants to be able to show that he is worth his weight in gold and can walk into a situation that maybe isn't top-notch but still has some nice pieces and put it together and take the team on a run and make people forget that he was ever just soon-to-be overpaid talking head.
Or maybe he'll walk into a situation where, yeah, they have a lot of pieces in place already, and then he comes in, Midas touch, people give him those laurels.
Or
he just walks into a perfect situation.
Or, I mean, he could be victim of, obviously it's Steve Yzerman, right? And I think, no pun intended, everything he touches, people expect it to turn to gold, right? So walking into, hypothetically, if he does walk into Tampa Bay and he doesn't turn that thing around with, say, within two years, he'll probably be shown the door, right? So there's lots of, it could be a good or a very disastrous risk for Steve Yzerman in terms of his hockey reputation, because let's be honest, after Gretzky decided to come down to the bench and coach the Coyotes, I mean, he just, in terms of a name in hockey, a talent evaluator, etc. Gretzky's credibility has gone down quite a bit since that experience behind the bench in Phoenix.
I just wanted to go back as well to the Ottawa thing. Like you mentioned that one of you, I forget who it was, maybe it was Francois, mentioned that he was surprised that the Huge wasn't in on Yzerman if Yzerman actually had serious, genuine interest in an Ottawa gig.
I did say that, but don't give me credit for it, though.
Okay, deal. We kind of went through this last year, right, with Pat Quinn as a rumored coach at around the World Junior time. Like, I don't know, maybe we kind of slack the Huge, but maybe he knows what he's doing a bit more than we give him credit for.
How do you go from Pat Quinn to Corey Clouston? I mean, those two look like polar opposites, eh? I mean, Quinn's the big Irish guy, and Clouston just looks like the little leprechaun.
He probably spent too much time getting a spray tan that day.
I don't think Clouston would have given him a hug either.
If you put Pat Quinn and Corey Clouston beside each other, they'd look like Schwarzenegger and DeVito in Twins.
How about sticking with the Clouston theme? The NHL has revealed awards kind of like day by day. Corey Clouston, obviously. Like in the major leagues. Corey Clouston, obviously, wasn't nominated for the Jack Adams Trophy. I think it was Barry Trotz, Tippett in Phoenix, and
Joe Sacco.
Joe Sacco in Colorado. Thank you. How do you guys feel about Corey Clouston not getting a nod? I haven't seen the extended voting, so I have no idea how he ranked, but how do you feel?
He's probably preparing for training camp. He probably didn't even notice he wasn't nominated. I don't put too much stock into it either.
Yeah, he was like, he was running on a treadmill with a sauna suit on.
Yeah.
Watching, breaking down game tape. You know it is true, too.
Oh, yeah, he's
every time
insane.
You see that guy, it looks like he's had less and less sleep than the night before.
He's like that general in Top Gun that sends Maverick away to Top Gun's flight school, you know?
Just mental marathons every single day. Could you imagine sitting next to that guy on a plane or something? Just the fidgeting and the nervousness.
He's for sure, like, he'd be like on the Bill Belichick coaching all-star team,
No sweatshirt. I bet you if he could have a sweatshirt on the bench, he'd actually wear it, though.
Oh, absolutely.
You've seen his suits. You know he has no interest in wearing them.
At least Corey can pick his own sweatshirts. His wife has to pick his suits.
Well, the one thing is, in regards to Jack Adams, I was a little bit surprised that Corey Clouston, maybe he did get consideration. Am I surprised? Well, he coaches the Ottawa Senators. Let's be honest. They probably don't get a whole lot of media attention down in the U.S., the one thing is with Joe Sacco, I was listening to Pierre Maguire this morning, Pierre knows everything, right? I was listening to him, and he was saying he was kind of against the idea of a first-year coach being nominated for the Jack Adams because there's a bit of a honeymoon period there, and you always kind of expect the team to do well when you name a new head coach, and I kind of agree with him. And along those lines, like, Barry Trotz has been in Nashville forever, so how can you really justify, I guess he's kind of the sentimental pick or whatever, but I mean, if you say that Nashville is not a good team and he got them into, the playoffs or whatever, how do you not justify giving Corey Kluson a nomination, given all the injuries that we've had, and given the fact that most of the prognosticators predicted us to finish, you know, like 10th or worse in the Eastern Conference, right?
Well, it goes back to that Danny Healy fiasco and kind of creating a team mentality. Like, that's kind of what I give Corey Kluson credit for this year. And, yeah, like, a lot of people will harp on him for his goaltending decisions. But I don't know. Like, Elliott was a hot hand. I don't know how you get away from that. I can't really fault him there. But, I don't know. I think he's done a reasonably good job.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that maybe part of the fact that he wasn't nominated for this award maybe just goes to show that the people who do the voting for this thought that the Ottawa Senators were a better team than Corey Kluston was able to elevate them to. You know what I mean? Like, the plan was already in place, but Kluston wasn't able to bring them there. He has got them to where they should be, and that was that.
I'm just glad Lindy fucking Ruff wasn't nominated again. I can't stand that guy.
Everyone loves Buffalo.
If Lindy Ruff, if Ryan Miller wasn't in that net on a nightly basis, like, how bad would that team be? I mean, again, along the lines of the awards, right? Like, the Hart nominees came out today. Henrik Sedin, obviously Ovechkin, and Crosby. But, I mean, if you take Ryan Miller off the Buffalo Sabres, that's probably not even a playoff team. I mean, I know it's easy to point the finger at a goalie and say he's probably the most valuable player on any team. But, I mean, how does Ryan Miller not get nominated for the Hart Trophy? Because Buffalo is just it's a team full of plumbers if, like, you know, you take him out of those nets, right?
While we're talking about awards, our next guest was nominated for the Masterson. He's a local Ottawa boy. How about we take a break? We'll come back. We'll interview Curtis Foster. And then we can wrap it up with the conclusion.
Yeah, that sounds good. I need a break.
Let's do that. Listeners, joining us on the program right now is a defenseman for the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's also one of the three nominees for the Masterton Trophy dedicated towards perseverance and dedication to hockey. Curtis Foster, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
Doing very well, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, life's all right today.
So, Kurt, first of all, congratulations, and how are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling great. I'm sitting in sunny Florida right now. There's blue skies, and you know, it kind of sucks watching the playoffs this year, but you know, was pretty excited, you know, and happy with the way the year went, and you know, just trying to get some rest, and then the training starts pretty soon to get ready for next year.
Well, at least you're in a good spot to watch the playoffs. I wish I was on a beach right now. So what have you thought of the playoffs so far? Have you seen anything that's really surprised you? Obviously there's a lot to be surprised about this year in the playoffs, but what's really jumped out at you?
For me, for sure, is you know, the big win by Montreal last night. You know, Washington is in our division, and you know, every time we played them, you know, it was a battle. Whether it was you know, we won. I think we won three games against them this year, but you know, it seemed like they were just such a powerful team. And you know, playing Montreal a little bit this year, you know, they were very strong defensively, but you know, they didn't really have a ton of offensive power. And you know, it was a huge upset for Montreal. And you know, I think, if Halak keeps playing like that, you know, they could spread some more teams.
How would you view Washington? Do you think that's just an epic failure on their part to advance around? Because I know, like, a lot of fans were looking forward to seeing another Pittsburgh versus Washington series. What do you think of that the state of that franchise right now?
I mean, I think it's just a hiccup in the road. You know, playing them this much this year. When I played Minnesota before, we didn't see them very much. We didn't get the opportunity to play them live, but playing them live this year, you saw how powerful, you know, they were. Like, they could score a goal at any moment, and you know, I think they built a pretty good team after the trade deadline. They brought in a couple guys that, you know, really solidified them, but I think you know, they just ran into a team that played very, very well defensively, blocked a lot of shots, and kind of, you know, their goalie stood on his head the last couple games. And you know, it's and if you ask any guy who probably played in the league, I bet you all of us would have picked Washington to win that series. So I think it's just a hiccup, and you know, I think going into next year, they got a, you know, great foundation, and you know, they're going to be a team to be reckoned with for a lot of years.
So, Kurt, one of the things that stuck out in terms of some of the analysts were saying last night in that game is that they felt that Ovechkin, over the course of the series, had become a little bit predictable in his play. When you guys prepare to play this guy, would you say that he's someone that is somewhat predictable, or do you think that he really is that dynamic and electrifying player that can change his game up and make it really tough to defend him?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you know, the media can say what they want, you know, but, you know, I was reading a little bit on the today on the Capitals on the hockeynews.com about whether, you know, maybe a coaching change would help, and they talked about how an average series Ovechkin had. Like, to me, 10 points in 7 games isn't very bad. Like, that's actually pretty good, you know, 5 goals in 7 games. But, you know, I think people just expect so much. And, you know, when your team loses and you know, you're first place in the league and you win the President's Trophy and you're the superstar, you know, it all falls on his shoulders. And that's the tough part about it. But, you know, he's a guy that every time he's on the ice, he can put the puck in the back of the net. You know, it doesn't matter where he's shooting from. He's got such a quick, hard release, and, you know, his shot is always so accurate that, you know, I think he can score from anywhere. And, you know, I think it's more, you know, their secondary scoring didn't come through for them, you know. Like, you know, Semin, I don't even know if he had a goal. And he's a guy that every game you got to watch him too, because he can, you know, can score from anywhere too. So I think it was more, you know, the supporting cast kind of not coming through, because, you know, Ovechkin, you know, with what he did, I think, you know, should give him a pretty good chance to win.
Late in the year, you had a chance to play against Ottawa. I think it was Alfredson's 1,000th and first game. How would you view Ottawa as a team, and were you surprised that they pushed Pittsburgh to 6 games?
You know what? Ottawa was they seem like a very well-coached team. They, you know, play a very good defensive style. You know, they seem like they're all on the same page. When they came in here against us and played us, you know, a couple games left in the season, you know, I would have told you that there'd be a team to be a tough team to play in the playoffs. You know, I really think for them, losing Mihalik and Kovalev hurt them a lot more than people thought. Like, I know they had a great series and they took Pittsburgh to 7 games, and you know, they had some, you know, key goaltending at the right times. You know, I know they went with both guys, but I think if you had those two guys, you know, that's the difference. I think they have a good chance to beat Pittsburgh and, you know, go on a long way. And you know, I mean, from another player's standpoint, I mean, you know, I'm being from Ottawa and putting it all together. I mean, you know, you always, you know, you kind of, I've always cheered for Ottawa, and, you know, you want to see them do the best, and I'm good friends with Mike Fisher, and, you know, you want to see them do well in the playoffs. But to me, Pittsburgh's just, you know, they're a superior team. Like, they're a team that, you know, could go all the way again. You know, Sidney Crosby is just, I think he's, in my opinion, he's in a league all of his own, and, you know, it's just it's tough to start in playoffs against them with also losing 2 of your top 6 forwards.
So you made reference to losing Mihalik and Kovalev, and the one thing in Ottawa, Kovalev obviously has gotten a lot of criticism here. The casual hockey fan seems to think that a lot of times on the ice, he's just sort of floating and things like that. But some of us in the studio share the view that, you know, he is someone who has to be accounted for out there. So can you speak to having played against Alex Kovalev, and even maybe when he's not putting points on the board, the presence that he may bring to the ice surface?
Definitely. I think that's, you hit it, you know, right on the button. He's a guy that, you know, I don't know if he had 50 points or what he had this year. And, you know, I know he's had the big contract and stuff, but he's a guy that every time he's on the ice, you got to know where he is. You know, he can hurt you anywhere in the offensive zone. You know, he can, you know, stick handle free or around you and, you know, put one top corner any time. So, you know, even if he's not scoring goals, you know, you got to really pay attention to him, which might free up other guys. And, you know, and I think Mihalik, too, he was a guy that, I don't know, I mean, I wasn't really sure how he did this year, but I played against him a lot in San Jose, and he's got so much speed that it's the same sort of thing that you got to pay attention to it all the time. And, when they're in the lineup, it could create more offense for other guys. And when I was watching the series against, you know, Pittsburgh, I found that, you know, Fisher's line did very well, and Spezza's line was kind of, you know, Regan played well, but, you know, Foligno played well, but they didn't score a lot of goals. And I think the difference is you put, you know, Kovalev or Mihalik on that line, I mean, I think it makes a big difference.
So I think Kovalev scored 49 points this season. Mm-hmm. You weren't too far off that pace. I think you had 42. That's a pretty damn good year for a defenseman. So how would you view your season and Tampa Bay season as a whole?
Well, it was, you know, I kind of came in this year. They kind of called me the wild card here. They didn't know what to expect, you know, coming off my injury. And, you know, beginning of the year, I worked my way into the top 60 during training camp. You know, we had 9 defensemen to start the year, which made it tough because you had to perform every night or you're going to be able to line up. And first game of the year, I hurt my knee, kind of got clipped by Eric Bolton in Atlanta and missed 4 or 5 games. And that kind of put me in the back burner early. And, you know, from then on, for the first, I'd say, you know, 15 games or so, I was kind of in and out of the lineup. But once I get in the lineup, get on the power play and start producing a bit myself, things went well. You know, when we got our power play figured out and we had our coaching with a guy like Adam Oates, who was, you know, one of the top assist guys of all time, I mean, he taught us, you know, so many little things that helped us, you know, have our power play as good as it was. And, you know, playing with Sam Close, playing with Vinny, playing with Marty, you know, these are guys that are all, you know, all-world players, and it was definitely fun, and, you know, I think it brought my game to a new level by playing with these guys.
So, Kurt, obviously this was your last year in your contract. You're heading into unrestricted free agency status right now. Tampa Bay's undergoing ownership issues right now with the change. How is this going to affect your current situation?
I don't think it affects it now. You know, the new owner came in towards the end of the year, had a big meeting with all the players, you know, coming down the stretch, and just said that what his plan was. And then after the season, we had a meeting, our year-end meeting, and the owner came in and talked to us and told us that he had let Rick Tocchet and Brian Lawton go. And, you know, it didn't surprise much of us. You know, we knew that there was going to be change. We were kind of surprised that Rick Tocchet was let go. But you know, I think he's got everything in the right direction. You know, everybody you talk to in the offices here, anybody else, you know, you got to deal with the team. It seems like this owner wants to make this team, you know, a world-class organization. You know, he's a minority owner in the Boston Red Sox, and he kind of, you know, his wording usually is he wants to make this the Boston Red Sox of the NHL. And, you know, when you say that, you know, it sounds like it's a place you want to be. But, you know, they got to hire a new president, and then who will hire a GM, who will hire a coach. And once that's all in place, you know, this is where I'd like to be. If it's the right situation that way, you know, I can't complain. It's a great city to play in. You know, it's kind of got the small-town feel like Ottawa does. You know, my wife and I really like it here. It's, you know, great weather. A lot of family come down. You know, they come to Florida to have the weather and, you know, watch some hockey. And it's, you know, it's a good bunch of guys, too. So, all in all, I mean, this is definitely a place I would like to be. And, you know, hopefully, you know, by July 1st, I'm signed and back here. But if not, we'll have to see what's on the open market.
It's too bad you're not here right now, Kurt, because the two guys I'm sitting beside have, like, the dopiest Boston Red Sox fan grins on their faces.
Oh, yeah, the jokes that are filling my mind right now.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, Kurt, this is, well, you've played for 3 teams, so Atlanta, Minnesota, and Tampa. And out of those 3, this is the second that you can say is in a non-traditional hockey market. So, you know, as a Canadian kid, can you just speak to how you like playing or how, you know, what your experience is playing in a non-traditional hockey market?
You know, it's different. I've been in 5 organizations in the NHL, and started with Calgary, where, you know, Canadian City. They love their hockey. You know, it was just like playing in any Canadian city. I went to Atlanta and played in the minor league system, and you know, it's different. You know, when you have 8,000 people in the stands, you know, some nights you might get 15. You know, I played a couple of games there, and I mean, I still play in the NHL, so you don't really, you know, at the beginning of my career, you know, you're just happy to be out there. You don't really look around and see what's out there. But you know, when I went to Minnesota, and you know, Minnesota's a state that they call it the state of hockey, and it really, really is. It's like playing in Canada. They sell 18,000 every night. You know, there's green jerseys everywhere you go. You know, it really was an awesome place to play. And you know, if anybody ever asked me, I would tell them to go to Minnesota in a second. And you know, coming here to Tampa this year, it was different. You know, it was different. You know, for a while, you know, we had some nights where there wasn't a lot of fans. And you know, it's weird. We used to call it their blue shirt giveaway night when all the empty seats were here, but all the seats were blue. But you know, you get used to it. You know, you try to focus on, you know, what's on the ice and who you're playing against. And you know, I think all the benefits of the other stuff. And you know when the fans are here, because when you start winning a few games, you start showing up. So you know, hopefully next year, if I am back, you know, we can, you know, get on a more of a winning path and, you know, create more of a, you know, of a winning attitude, and you know, make sure that the fans, you know, when they want to come back.
I was watching the game last night, and during I think it was the first intermission, they were doing like the hot stove kind of discussion, and one of the names that came up for the vacant Tampa Bay job was possibly Doug Risebrough, and I know he was a GM in Minnesota while you were there, and I know after you sustained your injury, he signed you to a contract while you were hurt. How much would that mean to you if he was actually hired on by Tampa?
Well, you know, I think it would be a good thing. You know, he had me for 4 years, you know, kept bringing me back to Minnesota and, you know, seemed to like me while I was there. So, you know, if he was brought in, I think that would be a good situation. But, you know, you never know what happens. I mean, when they come in, you don't know what the situation is like. You know, we have five guys re-signed already for next year, and they have to re-sign me and Mike Lundin. So, you know, you never really know what they're going to do. So it'll be interesting to see. But, you know, if he's brought in, I think he's a guy that will right the ship and, you know, take this team to where I think, it, you know, where everybody thinks it can be. And, you know, if he comes in, and you know, hopefully it works out.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, as you talk about, you know, being in a situation where you're not really in complete control from at least ownership end, from your own perspective, what are some, you know, maybe some intangibles that aren't people that you are looking for when you look for a new home or maybe the same home?
Going after the year and, you know, seeing what we had this year and seeing the promise for next year and seeing, like I said, what the ownership has put in front of us, I mean, this is number one. This is where I want to be. But to be honest with you, you know, come back from my injury and, you know, I played for, you know, close to the league minimum this year. You know, I'd like to get, you know, paid, you know, reasonably and, you know, as much as I think I should get paid. And, you know, we'll see what happens at Tampa Bay. But, you know, when it comes to July 1 and you're looking for the situation, you know, it depends who's out there. It depends what teams, you know, how much they offer. You know, but you don't, for me, I don't want to take, you know, more money to go play in a place that they already have three or four power play guys. You know, you want to go to a place where you know you're going to play the situation that you're going to succeed the most at. Because, you know, if you go to a situation where you're, you know, you're not playing the style or the way that you know you can play, it makes it tough to go to the rink every day. And I think that comes into it. And, you know, I think, you know, the weather and the way the city is, I think that's all more family stuff, you know, whether, you know, your wife likes it or your kids like it. But I think, you know, you want to be you'd like to be in a traditional hockey market where there's a great crowd and a good following, and you know, just make sure it's the right situation for you on the ice. And if all that falls into play, and you know, they also have a good coach, you know, I think it can work pretty well.
I think at least the three of us in studios here can agree that Ottawa doesn't have three or four power play defensemen. Now, in today's Ottawa Sun, I'm not sure you're familiar with Don Brennan, but he was championing your cause to come to the Ottawa Senators today, and also threw in that you were from the Ottawa area. What would it mean to have the opportunity or to even have the chance to play in your hometown? Is that something that you would be interested in?
Definitely. You know, growing up, being in, you know, watching the Sens, being a 67 fan, you know, hockey in Ottawa has always been such a huge thing in my heart. And, you know, I played in Peterborough and the OHL and used to play 67s all the time. And, you know, you see how great the fans are in Ottawa. And, you know, all my family, when it's playoff time, I mean, everybody's watching the Sens, even though if I'm in playoffs, they're still watching the Sens. And, you know, it'd be an amazing feeling, you know, being able to move home and see my family and be able to spend more time with, you know, friends and family. I mean, it'd be a bonus. And, you know, I know, you know, a few of the guys in Ottawa, and I know, and from what I hear, it's a very well-run organization, and, you know, guys enjoy playing there. So if it would work out, it would definitely be a place that would be, you know, high on my list.
So, Kurt, I've never been the type of guy who creates myself in hockey video games. I just wanted to know, what does it feel like when you're playing a video game and you're in it?
I'll be honest with you, I haven't played in a few years, but, you know, I remember when I first came, you know, was playing the NHL. And, you know, I'd be honest with you, on the playing guys play, but on the playing the guys play on the PSP, and it's usually war games. So I don't know how many guys in the NHL games, but I remember getting, you know, and I'll always have it, and I'll never put it, take it away, is, you know, having my, I mean, I think it was when I was with Atlanta, I had my name in one of the NHLs. I think it was, you know, 05 or 06 maybe, and, you know, just seeing yourself on there where you didn't, like you say, where you didn't actually make your own profile. It's pretty cool. And, you know, every year you kind of check. You know, I always check to see what my shot power is, hoping that they actually have a good rating for me, because that's kind of the only thing that I think we close to 100. So that's definitely one thing I look for.
Kurt, every week when we have a featured guest on, we do like a quick hit segment where we throw like one sentence at you and you give us like the first thing that comes to mind. Do you want to, would you be interested in sticking around and doing that with us?
Yeah, I've done it with Michael Landsberg, so let's see what you guys can do.
Oh, yikes.
Well, we're definitely not Michael Landsberg. all right, first question. Last night, Was it last night or 2 nights ago?
2 nights ago.
It was 2 nights ago. I know you're a big baseball fan. Danny Heley, I'm not sure if you've seen the video yet, but threw out the first pitch in San Francisco. And a 17-year-old girl threw a pitch at the same time as Heley. And hers was a lot better than his. Let's just put it that way. How embarrassing is that for hockey players? Especially for – I know you're a good ball player as well. So how embarrassing is that if you've seen the video?
Well, I haven't seen the video, and I didn't know, but when you were explaining it, I was going to say embarrassing myself, but you already threw it out there, so I would just say very embarrassing.
What's your favorite Ottawa Minor Hockey League moment?
Definitely playing in the Ontario Championships and the Colby Cup with the Ottawa Valley Titans playing against Thunder Bay in the finals when I was in Major Bantam.
All right, you had the privilege of playing against Daniel Alfredsson in his 1,001st NHL game, and you're a big Senators fan, at least at one point you were. What is your favorite Daniel Alfredsson moment?
Favorite Daniel Alfredsson moment? I don't know if I'm that big of a fan, but did he scored a big goal against Buffalo there a few years ago, didn't he?
That he did. That he
overtime
did.
Goal, I think. I think I was in O'Connor's in Canada watching the game, and I think I was, you know, I got to admit, I think I was with Minnesota at the time, but, you know, I was, when you see everybody around you in Ottawa get pretty excited and jumping around, you, you know, you get a little excited for it, too.
What's your favorite fan encounter that you've had personally?
Favorite fan encounter? You know what? Something happened this year that was pretty cool. I have a niece and nephew. She's 7, and my nephew's 4. But my niece is 7. She's probably smarter than most of us. And I think, you know, they're at the age where they don't really realize that I'm, you know, in the NHL, they just think I'm just Uncle Curtis. And they were down here in Tampa Bay. And I stopped after a game. There's always fans waiting after the game in my truck. And she was in the back with her family and my wife. And I stopped. I was signing autographs. And she asked her mom, "What's he doing?" And her mom was like, "Oh, you know, they want his autograph." And she's like, "Why?" And she's like, "Well, he's a big star hockey player." And when she kind of, her face, when she said that, I looked back and she kind of like, "Oh, okay." Like, she didn't really realize what it was until then. And that was pretty cool for me.
All right. What is the strangest thing that you have autographed?
Oh, God. You know what? There's so many weird ones. I mean, you can, you know, foreheads, forearms, you know, shoes, fans, you know what? They amaze you with the stuff they want signed. I don't know. Sometimes kids are pretty funny too, though, because they want everything they have that they're wearing signed. So it's you know what? But I'll do whatever they want, because you know they're the main thing, and you know you want them to come as much as they can. You know, basically, you know, the whole key to the NHL is the fans, and you know, I'll try to sign everything as long as it's not X-rated.
All right. So last question, Kurt. You've been down in Tampa Bay for the better part of a year now. Have you ever bumped into or met Hulk Hogan yet?
No, not yet. And his daughter, I guess, sung at a few games in the National Anthem, but we weren't lucky enough to meet him yet.
Well, on behalf of the guys here, I just want to thank you for coming on the show, Kurt. We really appreciate you taking the time, and we wish you best of luck at the NHL Awards.
All right, guys. Appreciate it, Graham, and nice meeting you guys.
Yeah, take care, Kurt. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Cheers.
Take care, Graham.
You have to do it running, but you do everything that they ask you to, cause you don't mind seeing yourself in a picture, as long as you look far away, as long as you look removed, showered and blue blazing, fill yourself with quarters, showered and blue blazing, fill yourself with quarters.
So guys, maybe you noticed, maybe you didn't notice, we've been penciled in to one half of Sen's Army that I guess you could call the negative half, whereas the other half is the Bleeding Heart fans. Following last week's podcast and our assessment of the team's playoff performance and, you know, kind of, you know, toying with their regular season performance as well, we came down on the Senators a little bit, I think, and some others really thought we did.
I was just one guy.
One guy. The guy on the other half of Sen's Army, which is support them at all costs, and when everything goes wrong, blame Spezza.
Do we want to admit that we...
He didn't say blame Spezza. But no. Yeah, like, I don't know. He just said he was disappointed. But I thought I don't know. I thought we played both sides of this. We said, you know, if they go status quo, we've essentially turned ourselves into a team that each year, yeah, they can make the playoffs, but in order for this team to go far, they have to get a favorable draw, you know, to do well. They've kind of like become one of those New Jersey or like Carolina teams that, you know, you're really dependent upon the matchup. And I don't know, like if people are content with that, that's great. But
well, I guess buying a lottery ticket gets you one step closer to the payday, right? But ultimately, it just gets your foot in the door. It doesn't guarantee you anything. And if you want to roll the dice that many times and hope for a good matchup one year and that it's going to pay off, it's a pretty lousy way of looking at it.
Well, I mean, and this might be a bad comparison, right? Because there's no salary cap in baseball, but us three being baseball fans, I think we can all agree on the fact that if the New York Yankees were happy to just settle for playoff appearances year after year after year, they wouldn't have won this many world titles, right? They're an all-or-nothing organization, take no prisoners. And to a certain extent, the Boston Red Sox are the same way, right? It's not about making the playoffs and giving themselves a chance. It's about building a team to win a world championship every year. And I think that at least as a Sens fan, regardless of what the reality of our situation is in terms of payroll complications, whatever, I would rather have a team that has a chance of winning a Stanley Cup than, you know, just building kind of a middle of the pack team every year and giving myself a chance, right? If I knew that plan was in place.
Well, it's like the whole Blue Jays kind of like rebuilding argument, right? Because that's what they did, right? Years under JP Ricciardi, they were trying to like get that wild card spot, and you know you're in a division with a rebuilding team like Tampa, and then you have the Red Sox and Yankees spending over like $200 million a season on payroll, so it's unrealistic for the Jays standpoint to like try and contend every year. So they had to go back to like, you know, under Alex Anthopoulos, they started to go under the rebuild and redirection. They traded Halliday and all that jazz. I don't want to get too much into the baseball discussion, but Ottawa's kind of reached a similar standpoint, I think, if they have to go through the East and go through Washington and Pittsburgh. Yeah, but anyways, status quo might not even be an issue if Jason Spezza asks for a trade and we can't sign Volchenkov. So who knows, right?
Yep, and if we're leaving opportunity till next year, there's going to be at least 10 other teams who are going to be looking for the same window as well. It's not going to get any easier.
Oh, and it's going to get tougher as the seasons go on. Like, Tampa Bay is going to get better with Stamkos and LeCavalier, St. Louis, and Hedman, right? That's a team on the up. You can probably make the same argument for a team like the Islanders or an Atlanta. Like,
well,
those teams
Atlanta
are only going to get
better.
You know,
Atlanta's gone through two really strong drafts now with Zach Bogosian, Evander Kane. They seem to have a decent goalie with Andre Pavlik now. So there's no guarantee the Senators are going to be in a playoff position next year. Some of these teams, you know, improve by a few points, a few wins here and there.
And spend some money.
You forgot Patrick Steffen.
Anything else? That was all right.
No, I want to end on the Patrick Steffen remark.
You're going to end on the Patrick Steffen remark?
Yeah, it was either that or Beltre, so I had to go with Steffen.
Right on. Okay, so I guess that's the wraps for another episode of the Sixth Sense podcast. We'd like to thank you for listening. We'd like to thank Curtis Foster for coming on the program. We wish him the best of luck at the NHL Awards show. I guess he gets a free trip to Vegas out of it. Not bad.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
It's better than a free trip to Toronto.
Amen.
Amen. Thanks, guys. Fun show.
Support your team.
Support your team.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
All right, take care. Talk to you next week.